Welcome to edition of An Artifactual Journey. I'm your host, Philip J. Merrill. And today, I always say this, I'm always excited. But for real, though, I'm deeply excited because good things come to those who wait. The guest today has been waiting and waiting for some time, for months. There's been one roadblock, one bit of devilment, one bit of life's happening to not allow us to get together and have a heart-filled, inspirational conversation. I know that was a long amount of introduction. I'm not pontificating, but I just wanted to set the record straight that this is a good mother who has been very patient in his wait and determined that we're going to celebrate his experiences. So without further ado, please tell the audience who you are. Who are you?
Grand Rising. I am Reverend Dr. David M. Johnson, former congressional candidate, former New York State candidate as well for senator.
So you are a man of the cloth?
Yes.
And can you just share what type of cloth? You know, what denomination? What are you rolling with?
The healing cloth. I'm of the Christian faith, a Baptist. I regard myself more spiritual than religious. My ministry for most of my life has been in the community-based guy. Also, when I got involved in the political arena, that also became a ministry, you know, because in there, there's a lot of politics and politrics, and people need to be aware of their rights and how to navigate a very complex system.
Most definitely. And where were you pressing the flesh? When you say New York, break it down for what borough or what? Where exactly in New York were you doing this good work?
Okay, mostly in the Bronx. I spent about 25, 30 years in the Bronx, feeding the hungry, administering to families that were down and out, that were struggling, especially kids, working with a lot of the youth down there. And ultimately, they ended up calling me Brother Minister because I did a lot of work with the youth. I had no idea. When they said, Brother Minister, and an older guy said, man, do you know what just happened here? I said, what's that? He said, they called you Brother Minister. I said, I don't know why. I'm a pastor. I don't know why they call me Minister. He said, man, they called you Brother Minister after Malcolm X. After that, man, I loved it. Brother Minister, hey, how you doing? I love that.
That's a perfect segue. I could not have written that script better, nor could you. So, Brother Minister, what in the world are we really going to talk about today?
Oh, man. I'm so glad you asked. We're going to talk about my experiences growing up in Harlem and my encounter with Elhaj Malik Shabazz, Malcolm X.
So stop.
Now.
Hold the presses. You, as a young person, and define roughly how old you were.
This is around 1963, 1964. I was like 7, 8 years old.
Okay, so you're telling me that you were blessed to be in the presence of this iconic figure in history. Take it away. Do what you do.
Well, let me just build a little bit of the foundation for you. My mom was a single parent. We lived in Teresa Hotel in room 728. And at that time, Black folk weren't allowed to stay in the hotels downtown. So this was the only hotel that they could stay at. So it was a lot of famous people, well-known people that would stay at the hotel. You know, it was very expensive too back then. My mom couldn't afford to stay there, but they liked my mom. They saw that she was a single parent trying to raise her son the right way. So they gave her a job. So she was a coat check girl in a place called the Skyline Ballroom that was way up at the top of the Teresa Hotel. And she'd take me to work with her. And I, you know, I knew my numbers pretty good. I knew how to count. So I would get the number and match it up with the code and put it on the hanger and give it back. And she put a little cot down for me to sleep. And every now and then, the hotel manager, who was Mr. Brown, who happened to have been Ron Harmon Brown's father, he was the hotel manager at the time. And he used to go to sleep in this big leather green chair in the lobby with a pistol on the side of his hip and a shot across his kneecaps. And
wait a minute. He was double prepared, right? A pistol and a shotgun.
Yeah. With a broke down Stetson. and he would have his leg crossed. He'd have his legs crossed so you could see his socks and part of his ashy legs. And he would be snoring.
No, no.
And the folks there would say, man, look at him. He's supposed to be protecting us if anything goes down, and he's over here snoring, man. I could go take that shot. Look, his hat done fell off the floor.
Hold up. And I'm following you, but you got to give hat tip and kudos to your mom. Can you throw out her name, please?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Jean Johnson.
Okay.
My mom's name was Jean Johnson. She was also an activist, community activist at that time.
Proper credit to your mom. So go on with Jean Johnson.
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
she's been gone a long time, but yeah, okay. Absolutely. And she was out there moving and shaking. So the hotel manager, Mr. Brown, would walk me to like the open ballroom up at the Skyline Ballroom. And we would see everybody up there, Sarah Vaughan, Lena Horne, Dizzy Gillespie, Louis Armstrong. And I'd be watching, you know, I'm a little kid watching all of this stuff. And then they had all this food. So I would go get, you know, they would make me a little plate and I would go and eat, stuff like that. My mom on her break, if she had a break, she would walk me back there. And then somebody would ask for the dance because, you know, she had an hourglass figure. My mom was beautiful. And they would dance and throw her up in the air. And I'd get nervous. I started crying. I thought they was going to drop my mom. And the guy was like, no, they just dancing. It's okay. It's okay.
So, you trying to tell me
some
Manning kind of hand jive dancing?
You know, yeah, you know, they was.
Yeah, where they threw
with the feather in the hat and the long coattail and
through the
legs and around it. And, yeah.
Frankie Manning did that in New York.
I know my mom was an acrobat.
Right.
So now Malcolm X had an office on the second floor. So when you came into the lobby of the Hotel Teresa up in the on the second floor, you could kind of look over. They had a balcony area. He had an office up there. But I found that out a little bit later when I got a little bit older. But I remember going to school. I went to PS 154, which was the Harriet Tubman School on 127th Street, between 7th and 8th Avenue. So I went to that school, and my mom used to pick me up from the school. I was a little kid with the little NAACP cap on and the ears that stuck out. A little skinny. I was a skinny kid, but very smart, but I was real shy. So my mom would come down the street. You know how kids are. And grab her.
Yes.
And she had this big bag and it had all the jewelry and all these bracelets on each arm and this big bag. She had everything in there. If you needed a sandwich, an extra set of clothes, she had whatever in that bag. And she had heels on. I don't know how she did it. Right. So then she want to put me down. I say, Mommy, carry me. She said, boy, you better get on down. So now she got me by the hand. Now we're walking back to the Hotel Teresa. Front of the hotel, we see Malcolm X.
Now, hold up. Malcolm, stop. You know, wait a minute. Do you know who he was at the time as a little kid or no?
No, absolutely not.
He was just a black man, right? Just a man.
That's it. I had no idea who he was.
Okay.
I'm only 7, 8 years old.
Right.
He had this sea of reporters asking him stuff. He'd be talking, and then he'd look up, and he'd see my mom, and he'd see me. And he would just stop everything and just walk away from these paparazzi and come over to us. And he would go, because he knew my mama name. He said, he tip his hat. Good afternoon, Miss Johnson. And she thought he was handsome, but she thought he was a little bit too skinny, right? And she would look at him. She thought she saw he need to eat more. But right, she look at him, she would look at him and say, good afternoon, Minister X. Mm-hmm. And then he would look at me and he says, and how you doing, young man? How was school today? I'm fine, Mr. Malcolm. How about you? So then he would say, my throat's a little dry from talking to, you know, those people over there. And he said, I feel like a soda pop. So they called it back then. I feel like a little soda pop. He said, Miss Johnson, do you mind if I take your son so we can go get a soda pop from the machine? And she says, sure you can, Minister Malcolm. You know, so she called Mr. X, and she would take my hand and put it in his, right? So now I'm walking, holding Mr. Malcolm's hand. Now, you know, the front of the hotel, and then right beside it was this little storefront, and it was called How You Act, when I guess they got jobs for black people, How You Act, that's what it was called. And you go in there, and there was a vending machine. Malcolm would pull out a quarter. He put it in and asked me what I want. And he already knew what I was going to ask for. I say, great. So he punched it, boo-bah. And then he hit his, boo-bah. And that was his ginger ale. And it would come out, boo-doo, boo-doo. And then the nickel would come down, ding, 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 ding. And he pulled the nickel out, and he give me the 5 cents. Man, I was on the road. Then I had me a nickel.
And you had a grape soda pop, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then he had, you know, the can opener back then had like a little triangular front to it. So he pop it, pop the side, two holes, one on each side, and he does it for himself. So now I'm standing there. I'm standing there drinking the grape soda. And, you know, I'm a kid. I'm slept all over the place. And I look up. I says to him, I say, Mr. Malcolm? And he goes, yes. What kind of soda you got? And he would go, I got ginger ale. I said, oh, you sure got grape. He said, well, why? I said, because grape is the goodest.
Oh,
really? It's the goodest. So we sipping, right?
Right.
And slob is going all down my hand, all around the cup. You know, and I used to bite my nails down in the nub, so it got probably that all over the can. So finally, you know, I'm figuring. Finally, I says to him, Mr. Malcolm? He goes, yes.
I tell you what, I'll give you some of mine, you give me some of yours. You give me some of yours, I'll give you some of mine.
Tell me, that's what you do with your little playmates. You don't do that with the honorable minister. You don't. You actually said that to him?
Yes, I did. And he said to me, okay. So he hands me his ginger ale, and I hand him my grape. Now, by the way, the name of the soda brand was called Best Yet Sodas. Best Yet. And it cost 10 cents a can. And if you went to the AMP, sometime they'd have a sale. They'd give you anywhere from 12 to 15 for a dollar, right? So I would love to catch that AMP sale with my mom when I could. But even when we caught that, I was still waiting for Mr. Malcolm to give me my soda, right? So now I have his soda, and I'm spit everywhere. Everywhere. He looks, he gets my soda. He don't even wipe off the slob. He just starts drinking. So finally, he looks at me. He goes, okay, that's enough. He takes his soda back and gives me mine. Now, I done slobbed all over his man's soda. And he still don't even wipe, he just drinking. So finally, I'm sipping now, and I'm looking, I'm thinking again. And I say, Mr. Malcolm? He goes, yes.
I tell you what, you just give me a little bit more of yours, I'll give you a little bit more of mine.
I get a little bit more of mine. You give me a little bit more of yours.
So then he says to me,
huh?
I don't get it. You want a Mortimer
soda pop? Yes. Then he says to me, he says,
So I go, why not?
He said, because it's too good.
I love it. He really should have told you it's too much slobber on it, but
that's what he really should have said.
Right.
But man, and in the meantime, all the reporters out there, they're talking about, you know, we're trying to interview him. Why is he talking to this kid? They were all waiting for him. And the thing that I love was, like, when me and him was together having that soda, he's asked me what I want to be when I grow up, how was school, how's I feeling today? You know, I was a little skinny, so sometimes I'm in school because I was sick. And he would ask me, yeah, you know, I asked you the other day. Your mother said you wasn't feeling well. I mean, he really cared. And then during that time, I see it at the corner of my eye, my mother would just be standing there all proud, looking like this, all proud, you know, and the whole world, when it was just me and him with that soda.
And so
I didn't know who he was. I didn't know he was famous. But when he got cut down, when he got assassinated, 65.
How old are you? Set the table for me. How old are you then when he's assassinated?
I was nine.
Okay. At that point, you realize who he was when he was assassinated, or later, or before that, you realized who he was?
No, I didn't realize who he was. And when he was assassinated, I knew he's a very important man, but I really didn't know the impact. All I knew that we were supposed to be at the Audubon because Malcolm personally invited us to come. My mother overslept, you know, because I wanted to go. We both wanted to go, but we overslept. And my mom, I'll never forget, she was in the mirror doing her hair. She had beautiful hair. So she's standing in the mirror doing her hair. And Channel 2 News was on with Walter Cronkite. And Walter Cronkite said, you know, news flash, and then talked about Malcolm being cut down. My mom screamed and cried, Lord Jesus, and she ripped a chunk of her hair out of her head and fell on her knees. And I came over crying because I knew what that means. And we both cried. And then later on, you know, my mom went to the funeral. I said, Mom, please let me go. I want to see Mr. Malcolm. She said, no, you're too young. And I remember, though, her standing in line in the pouring rain for hours to say goodbye to Mr. Malcolm. And, of course, you know, Ozzie Davis delivered the eulogy. And he made such an impact on me because he just planted a seed, you know, planted a seed of just being so respectful that he was.
Humility.
Yeah, yeah. Little did I know, it actually set into my psyche and I did something. I'll tell you what happened many years later when I lived in the Bronx on the concourse. There was this lady, she had about 7 or 8 kids, very pretty. They were all stair steps. So when she would come from the supermarket, they were all carrying bags and stuff. And some of the young guys out there at the time was saying disrespectful things under their breath, but she heard it. And the kids would hear it, but they didn't know what it was about. Well, they knew that they made the mom cringe and they would cry. So I would come up to her and say, hey, how you doing? And I grabbed 2 of the kids because I was a big guy. I grabbed 2 of them. The elevators never worked in that building. So I'd carry the younger ones up the elevator. Sometime I'd grab a bag and 2 kids. And she'd go, oh, thank you, Brother Minister. I said, no problem. So every time I saw her with them kids, I would do that. She's a single parent. Many years later, I was with 2 of my own children, and we were going through that area. One of the kids grew up, and he was like about 6'5", 6'6". He was a tall kid from the beginning, and they gave him a nickname, Too Tall, even when he was little. So he said, Brother Minister. So I knew, hey, this person must know me going way back.
Back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, he said, Brother Minister. I look up, I see this tall kid. He said, you don't remember me, do you? I said, no. And he said, my mama, we had the kid. And I said, oh, my goodness. I said, how's your mama doing? He said, oh, she's retired in Florida. She became a registered nurse. And I said, wow, that's great. Tell her I asked for. And I said, these are my 2 kids. So then he said to me, he was with his boys, right? He said, I'm so glad I saw you. He said, because I wanted to thank you. I said, thank me for what? He said, whenever you saw us, you wouldn't run over and help my mother. He said, and the grown-ups at the time were saying bad things. We didn't know what they were saying, but we just saw our mother was upset and we started crying. And you would go grab us, make us laugh, carry bags for my mom. And he said, you never once said anything disrespectful to my mother. Not one time. He said, I wanted to thank you for that. And in front of his friends and from my own kids, I shook his hand. I said, wow. I said, but you know where I got it from? He said, where? I said, I got it from the real Brother Minister. I got it from Malcolm X. I said, because my mother was very beautiful. And Brother Malcolm was around a lot of beautiful women.
Yes, right? Yes.
But he never once. And some of my friends, I told the story. They said, well, you sure? You know, I know your mother. I said, yeah, my mom liked Minister X. She would be smiling and stuff. And he's, how you doing? You know, Miss Johnson, he never once said anything disrespectful, never once tried to slip a phone number, never once did that. He was true. He was a true leader, a true man of God. I said, and he didn't veer nor left or right from his mission, man. And I really respected that.
You respect that, but that became the foundation that led you to being who you are today. And it manifests itself in front of Too Tall as a young person. Too Tall never forgot that. So Malcolm's blessing to you was played forward to Too Tall. And so maybe Too Tall is going to take that blessing and play it forward to someone else.
Yes. And this is the first time I've ever told this story, like, publicly.
Yes.
So it's a very personal story, extremely.
It's heartfelt. I love the emotion. I love when you were having to gather your feelings, because this is genuine. This is authentic. This is deep. This is the real conversation.
Yes, yes. And the goatee that I have to this day, I wear it in his honor. So that's talking about decades and decades. I've shaved it from time to time when I was a professional model and stuff, but mostly as soon as I was able to, I grew it right back.
So the larger public doesn't get to hear from a little kid's perspective of what this now iconic figure in history did on the human side. You know, you hear about the movement, you hear about the assassination, you hear about the trip to Mecca, you hear about, you know, all kinds of negative, positive, middle of the road conversation. But what you're sharing with this reflection is the essence of the man that the larger public does not hear about. Okay. And what I like about it is that we're going to release this in celebration and tribute to his 98th annual birthday celebration for May the 19th. And I just want to say to you that today, Black men need to show humanity. They need to show the gentle side. They need to show the respectful side. They need to show that we're not what the media has made us out to be. We're not what the entertainers have made us out to be. That we are complex, that we are human beings with feelings and emotions, and we can be touched by the genuineness of a little kid. And that's what he exhibited to you. And you had the audacity, because children don't know, they do know, but it's all about them as being narcissistic, that you wanted to share your sloppy soda with him. And then you had the audacity to come back again to say, oh, how about some more?
Yeah.
I'm gonna say, are you crazy? But
yeah. So, every time I saw him, I knew I was good for a Best Yet grape soda and 5 cents.
Right.
And we both knew it. He knew it and I knew it.
You got to see him repeatedly because of you living at room 728 at the Teresa and him being having office, yes, on the floor.
Yes, just about every day.
So,
just about every day. I also saw Muhammad Ali just about every day. He was there too. But I didn't particularly like Muhammad Ali. I was scared of him when I was a little kid, because he was so big.
Yeah, but we're not even going there, because this is just in celebration of the honorable minister.
I don't know who did this painting.
How did you acquire this?
Oh, this was a long, long time ago. Somebody knew that, you know, I told somebody the story who was close to me, and they happened to run across this painting and they brought it for my birthday. This was decades ago. And when they presented it to me, I just cried. I moved around a lot, and some things I had lost in storage at one point, and I was just praying that I didn't lose this. And I was able to, by the grace of the Almighty, to keep this painting. I see it every day.
It's lovely. And I have to ask you, is it signed? Do we know who the artist is, or can I?
I have no idea who the artist is.
And is it canvas or is it compressed wood? What's the?
It's canvas and it's wrapped around wood in the back. So it's actually a painting.
Here's my last question to you. As a father, how many children do you have?
I have 8. We're all grown.
Oh, my Lord. Well, you were spreading that seed, weren't you, brother? Okay.
I have.
I stopped you with that, didn't I? So are you also a grandfather?
No, not yet.
So what can you pass on to your children from your wonderful childhood experiences with Malcolm that they could then take and pass on?
Well, Malcolm, the way I saw Malcolm move, he was a man that wielded power without arrogance. He was a gentleman that understood the plight of our people, and he understood that if it was good for us, it was good for the world. Mm-hmm. And I think he was more about human rights than civil. He was very acquainted with United Nations procedures. And, you know, as I began to read about him as I got a little older, I found out that he was offered to become a candidate for United States Senate. A lot of people don't know that. And he, as a Democrat, and he respectfully turned it down. He was very flattered, but he turned it down. He said because he was in the process of going to Hajj. And they said, that's okay, brother. Take your time. Go do your Hajj and come on back. And we'll have the campaign going for you while you're over there. And you come on back, jump right in. He said, no. He said, whatever I do, basically, he said, I want to give 100%. And it wouldn't be right for me to be somewhere else. And I'm not campaigning. So he said, I respectfully decline. And I always wonder what would have happened if he had taken that. I'm quite sure he would have got elected by a landslide as a U.S. senator, and he could have been able to funnel all of the possibilities that he had for our people in the world through the U.S. Senate, and who knows, he may have still been alive for a lot longer than he was.
So thank you for sharing that. I was not aware of that, and you have my head spinning. I'm just thinking about if we did a play, movie, or script where it's based off of him actually becoming a senator and his impact on the Voting Rights Act, or him working with the 101st Senator Clarence Mitchell Jr. and Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society and
with, Adam Clayton Powell.
Right, the Big Cat, and also Martin Luther King Jr. And when would America be moved from his impact as being that elected political player with a far-reaching, you know, service? So, wow. So,
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
He was a visionary. Malcolm X was a visionary, not a dreamer. Well, he was a visionary.
And the reason that I appreciate your due diligence in sticking with us to get this story to us is that we don't know this side of the brother. We know what mainstream has given us. I thought Denzel should have won for the portrayal of what he did in Spike Lee's Malcolm, which was brilliant.
Yes, absolutely.
And Alex Haley writing the seminal book and so forth. But I love when you get the eyewitness accounts of someone that was right there, even if you were a little child wanting to trade soda pop. But at the end of the day, your story is just as important as Manning Marable's scholarship in my mind, or Alex Haley's, because you're coming at it from a holistic, from a natural, organic perspective of just being a little boy that this man took time out of his hectic, busy schedule to treat with compassion and humanity. And you touched his life in a way that now allow you to be a change agent and touch other people's lives.
Yeah, I loved him. Kind of looked up at him, like a dad.
Yeah, I love it. So this has truly been a powerful get together. It will be the beginning of many more, some that we will do visual and not just audio. But Brother Minister, I want to thank you for coming into my life, because talking to you gives me hope that allows me to go out to give other people hope because of who you are, your journey, and what you have experienced.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Nothing but mad love and respect for you. So,
for allowing me to share this story. I always wanted to, but I didn't know if I could actually bring myself to tell it. But I always wanted to share that story with the world.
You did a great job. And so peace and blessings.
Oh, my gosh.
Peace and blessings. And we will be in touch soon. Peace.